For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, and a great big thank you to Sydney. The place, not the person, although if you're a Sydney in Sydney, you get extra kudos for helping claim top spot in our now concluded countdown of top views by city. And to help you celebrate, I won't say good on you, mate, in the Australian equivalent of a biscuit tin Scotsman accent. I don't know what you call it, maybe the crocodile done don't. But it brings me to something that sounds like trash and is, namely, the claim that wildfires in South Carolina are yet more proof of climate change. For instance, blowtorch Bill Nye, who calls himself the science guy, though if there were just one, it certainly wouldn't be him, told CNN, quote, "There's wildfires in the Carolinas? That didn't used to be a thing, everybody," end quote. Which is, comically, completely anti-scientific disregard for basic, widely available data. Tony Heller had tried to slam on the brakes on that particular fire engine before it even got going with its sirens wailing, with his usual dive into the archives, observing that, quote, "A lot of people have been saying that South Carolina's largest fire occurred in 1976. This is not correct. There was a much larger fire during February 1898, end quote. And Matthew Wielicki presents charted data showing that fires do seem to have increased in the Palmetto State from 1950 until 1980. But then, as the climate emergency hit, they apparently fled from it. But who cares about facts when you're sowing climate panic? Or about decency? Nye's explanation for why people don't share his view was, quote, "You can take campaign financing from the fossil fuel industry and you can pretend climate's not changing and hurricanes aren't becoming more frequent and flooding isn't more," end quote. Which is rather ugly when he's the one doing the pretending. And while we don't expect modern journalists to do real fact checks, aren't there any meteorologists who want to object that hurricanes are not becoming more frequent wherever he thinks he was talking about? Or that there have always been fires in the Carolinas? Aren't there any scientists with the integrity to object publicly? On which point, we also continue to be baffled by alarmist claims that the long, cold winter of 2024-25 did not happen, is not happening, and must not happen. If things occur that surprise us and run contrary to our general understanding of the world and our expectations, then we notice them and we admit them. Like the fact that Arctic sea ice extent in 2025 is, so far, at its lowest level in a decade, which is the opposite of what happened in early 2024. But what are we to make of, quote, "the science behind the hottest January on record, what it means for the future," end quote, or, quote, "the impact of record-breaking January temperatures on global climate trends," end quote. Actually, as we reported recently, the best available satellite data show a sharp drop in temperature in January, and Ottawa, quote, "just had its coldest February since February 2015, end quote. In which Canada's capital is far from alone, with harsh conditions from here to Central Asia. But who are you going to believe? Data? Headlines? Or your own eyes and frosty toes? Apparently, if it did happen, it was all about the suddenly trendy polar vortex collapse, which Climate Cosmos dutifully links to climate. Quote, "The Arctic is warming at an astonishing pace, nearly twice as fast as the rest of the world. As the Arctic warms, the ice caps melt, which affects the delicate balance of temperature gradients that influence the jet stream. When these gradients change, the jet stream can become unstable, leading to unpredictable weather patterns," end quote. At least WeatherFox admits that, quote, "it may seem contradictory to suggest that a warming planet could lead to harsher winters." However, the mechanics of climate change reveal that increased global temperatures can intensify weather extremes, including those experienced in winter, end quote. Blah, 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 polar vortex, cold snaps, blah, blah, blah. But at the risk of doing science, a procedure that involves testing theories by comparing their predictions to the evidence, we note here that in his book Solving the Climate Puzzle, Javier Vinos notes a superficially paradoxical but empirically sound correlation between a warmer Arctic and harsher winters in eastern North America and eastern Eurasia, which, drumroll please, quote, "was not predicted by climate models," end quote. Vinos's explanation is complex, and we again recommend reading the book. But to simplify drastically an argument about everything from continental drift to solar influence on atmospheric currents, he thinks that the key determinant of global warming, or cooling is how much heat gets transported to the poles, where the greenhouse effect is minimal in winter, so from there it gets efficiently radiated back out into space. And if he's right about that, then having the Arctic warming faster than other places isn't proof of runaway warming, it's a cause of significant cooling. Which, we say again, is something for science to investigate, not for journalists, or us, to declare definitively settled one way or the other. And now, a word from our sponsor, which as always is you. Because at the Climate Discussion Nexus, we don't get lavish government money. We're not backed by huge foundations. We're crowdfunded. We're dependent on your one-time or monthly contributions, including now the thanks button on YouTube, if that's where you're watching us, to put out the newsletter, to make these videos, and to keep pushing back against climate alarmist idiocy. I actually think the battle is going quite well, but it's not won yet, so please help us push on to the finish line. And now for some good news. Finally, some justice for Mark Stein. The ludicrous $1 million damage award against him in favor of Michael Mann has been reduced to a derisory $5,000. And just possibly, like Meghan Markle, Michael Mann has now had his 15 minutes of fame, or in his case, 15 years, and it will soon be hard to remember why he ever got them. Also, another one bites the dust. A major Japanese bank just pulled out of Mark Carney's Net Zero Banking Alliance. Who's even left? And, for some comic relief, an alert viewer points us to a 1962 Los Angeles Fire Department film, Design for Disaster, the story of the Bel Air conflagration, end quote, that, in an unintentionally humorous dragnet style, shows how serious fires were there 60 years ago due to the prevailing climate conditions, including those devil winds, long before there was a climate change, and pointing out that they ran out of water then too. And then, on the rhetorical downside, we note that natural gas is apparently being relabeled fossil gas. Boo, fossils. And wildfires are now climate change fires. Boo, climate change. But propaganda is still just propaganda. Including the Canadian government, fresh from its humiliating failure to plant 2 billion trees to change the weather in a country that already has an estimated 300 billion of the things, is now pledging just shy of $50 million to help the city of Montreal plant 500,000 of those sticks with the green fuzz in just 5 years. Which works out to $100 per tree on top of whatever the municipality was already planning to throw into a hole in the ground, in this case literally. And speaking of trees, apparently the whole climate crisis can be thrown to the wolves out in the forest. At least, so says the Daily Mail. Quote, want to hit net zero? Easy. Just release wolves, say experts, end quote. And if you didn't know that wolves ate CO2, apparently the way it works is that they eat red deer, which then don't eat, quote, tree saplings and bark from older trees, end quote, on account of having gotten the Little Red Riding Hood's granny treatment themselves. And thereupon, it turns out, a mere and spuriously precise 167 wolves, and just in the Scottish Highlands, could indirectly save 1 million tons of CO2 a year, which apparently is about 5% of what's needed to get Britain to net zero by 2050. Oh my, what big carbon credits you have. In the newsletter, we also get to write, and now try to say, Dunkelflaute, which is a lovely word that conjures up memes regarding why Germans don't play Scrabble. But there's nothing geheimnisvoll about it. It means, quote, a period when it's dark and windless, end quote. And if you thought the Germans called that Nacht, at least sometimes, we say Nicht. A Dunkelflaute is longer and drearier, especially if you somehow decided that wind and solar power could replace oil, gas, and nuclear, and launched an Energiewende that might get you 2 triple word scores at once, but will not get you a reliable energy grid. And so, the mystery here is, why didn't they realize that having this word already in their vocabulary was a tip-off that they also had it already in their weather on a regular basis? Is someone a Dummkopf? In the newsletter, we then take a detour into politics to say that if you hate it, which a surprising number of people apparently don't, based on how readily they respond to political parties' fundraising appeals rather than those from less squalid and disappointing causes, we see an opportunity for a new party to hoist a turquoise banner. By that, we mean one that combines the insights of traditional blue conservatives, which in the US are inexplicably labeled red, about the organic nature of societies and markets, with those of grassroots greens about the organic nature of, well, nature. The strange thing is that, to create such a party, you'd have to start a whole new Green Party almost everywhere because of the weird way in which the supposedly green parties always turn out to be watermelons, you know, green outside but red inside, with cookie-cutter mechanistic progressive views on everything from social to foreign to environmental policy. Though we also have to concede that a lot of conservative parties are weirdly left-wing too. So we say both should mend their ways. And while we wait, we're taking a plunge into climate in the era of Trump. But not this time about how brilliant and long overdue his policies are, or how evil and insane they are. Instead, we want to talk more generally about truth and honesty in public policy. As you may be aware, Trump's adversaries frequently accuse him of poisoning the well of discourse with a carelessness about truth or a complete disregard for it. But as Roger Pilkey Jr. asks about a Swedish radio exposé of a torrent of, quote, climate misinformation from the United Nations, end quote, on everything from sea level rise to women and children hardest hit to the mythical surge in weather disasters since the 1970s, quote, does anyone care, end quote? And the reason he asks is that these issues are supposedly so important, and yet the claims were so easy to falsify, despite which they get repeated endlessly. And many people who should, in fact must, know better, say nothing. In RPJ's words, quote, lapses of scientific integrity in climate science have become normalized, end quote. And this happened long before Trump. So, if the people chanting, follow the science, don't care about truth, why would a politician? And speaking of seeking truth from facts, this week our Look It Up series goes back to the NOAA Climate at a Glance website to see just how much worse droughts are getting. I mean, after all, everyone says they're getting worse, right? And everyone blames climate change, complete with images of drought-ravaged landscapes on TV. Except when you check the data, which is easy to do if you know where to look it up, you find this monthly record of drought severity, with negative meaning drier, for the contiguous United States since 1895. The top 10 months for extreme dryness were all before 1957, and 7 of the top 10 were all in the year 1934. The first post-2000 entry is January 2013, and it's at number 30. Yes, the 2020s have been dry, but there's no trend, except toward people making up wild claims instead of checking the data. Speaking of which, a team of American climate scientists led by Jessica Weinkel of the University of North Carolina has developed a novel theory regarding the connection between climate change and hurricanes. While their work is not yet peer-reviewed, the results are statistically significant if they hold up, and if they're confirmed, they may go a long way to clearing up this complex puzzle. As we've noted many times, hurricane activity is not increasing, yet many scientists think that it should be due to climate warming. So, what could explain this discrepancy? According to Wankel and her co-authors, based on an analysis of dozens of studies by over 300 scientists published over the past 20 years, the mechanism appears to be whether the author of a study gets funding from an NGO or not. Oh dear. And here you said we skeptics were the venal ones misrepresenting truth for cash. And now, a corny item from the CO2science.org archive. Corn, or Zea maize L, is one of the most important food crops in the world, and of course, therefore, it's big business. And from 1979 to 2020, 60 experiments showed that an extra 300 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere raises corn growth by an average of 32.1%. And there were 16 experiments showing that an extra 600 parts per million of CO2 raised growth on average by 27.6%. That's quite the pop. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I know that where there's smoke, there isn't necessarily climate change.
That's right.